Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham, and we are shamelessly plugging our show at the Rialto Theatre on the 12th of December in association with OldFootballShirts.com. Well, with the Premier League having the week off, all eyes are on our players selected for their countries. So, what did we learn? Well, Lewis Dunk didn't get another England cap, but he may need to cancel his summer holidays. Matt Ryan pulled off an outrageous save in Australia's draw with South Korea. Bairam Kyle had the Scots worried after his scream for Israel gave them the lead at Hampden. Percy Tau, remember him? He scored for South Africa. Gaetan Bong, captain Cameroon against Brazil. And Shane Duffy became Brighton's most capped player after picking up his 18th and 19th caps as a Brighton player, surpassing Steve Penny's record of 17.
So the answer is not much.
Also this week, the club announced that Paul Barber has been promoted to deputy chairman after he was sounded out for various very high profile jobs. And today we get back to league action with Leicester City, our visitors, and after two successive defeats on the road, let's hope that we can outfox the Foxes. Joining me today is of course Alan Wares, and we are delighted to welcome back Mark Raven. Good morning, Mark, how are you?
Good morning, it's great to be back.
Have you stopped running yet?
I did park run this morning, so only 5k, so a little bit less than normal.
How many miles do you think you've actually run this year? Because I mean, you've done about seven. The last count, I think it was 15 marathons, 1,500 10Ks. You just don't stop.
But being very sad, I do have an app called Strava that actually records it, and I'm just under 1,100 miles this year.
Good grief.
Blimey.
I think in that case, there's a fundraising, a further fundraising opportunity, or at least a betting opportunity. How many miles will Mark run in 2019? If you reckon, say 1,100, did you say?
My target for this year is 1,200.
Right, so, you know.
So you've got another 100 to go?
Yeah, 100 miles a month at the moment.
It's just, no. So the only time I've seen you running, AD, is when there was the milk float, the beer float just disappeared, and you were crying at the same time.
I'm not going to that story again about my running career, which was phenomenal.
Yeah, talking of running, I did notice there is a Burnley fan who I believe is running to every single game this season, and I can't remember how many marathons it will take him to do it, but he will be running to the Amex from Burnley.
Well, to be honest, if I was a Burnley fan, I'd be running from every Burnley game.
Yeah, that's, I wouldn't return.
Running but away from it.
Well, let's put it this way, you can't trust the trains.
This is true. Okay, well, Mark, you are well known as an international fan of some note.
He's an international man.
And you've travelled the world watching England play. So did you ever think you would ever see an Albion player play for England after Steve Foster?
To be honest, I didn't know. When we were languishing in the bottom league, on the verge of going into the conference, who would see that we had? I can't remember how many players have played international football this weekend for the while they're at the Albion, but it's incredible. And to have Dunkey playing for England is absolutely fantastic.
So, I mean, when you see that, amazingly, you went to Brazil, you went to Russia, you travel the world, you go to most of the qualifiers. Yet the one game you missed, Lewis Dunk played.
I know, typical. I actually went down to a 90s music festival at Butlins in Minehead.
I had seen the photos, and it wasn't Shine, was it?
It was the Shine On Festival, so sadly we did miss it, but I think he will be in the next squad, and I will be there for that.
Lewis Dunk, Luis Wiener, it's a balance. It's a healthy balance.
It's a tough call.
Well, the thing is, we discussed his appearance last week, didn't we?
Yeah, briefly.
I mean,
when we could get a word in with John.
Sure is that. I mean, for those that weren't in Minehead, I mean, Lewis really did get the sort of like the cigars out of the back. He did make it look easy, but then I think it was just a really good game for him to break into his international career. Don't get me wrong, I think he'd have still done okay against Croatia, but I think in that sense it's important that you have the more experienced players. Let's not say that Gomez is massively experienced, but it was important you had the more experienced one, so you can understand the point. But the thing is also, you have to remember that Lewis Dunk was there replacing other defenders who are probably ahead of him in the queue. So while your point that he may or may not be going to Portugal next summer, you have to bear in mind who is going to be ahead of him, and has Lewis, just by playing and not letting himself down, has he promoted himself? These are the things that Southgate is going to have to ask. I still think it's going to be 50-50 as to whether Lewis goes. Don't get me wrong, he's done himself a world of good playing as he did and being part of that setup, but I'm still not sure that he's going to be ahead of the queue.
Well, Mark, he's got his foot in the door, though, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think the big positive for us, and I think it's good for Brighton as well, is he needs to keep up his level of performance, because if he can carry on as he's playing at the moment for the rest of the season, there's no reason he'll be dropped from that squad. And I think it is getting that first cap was massive because there was other players who were ahead of him in previous friendlies. Now he's got in the squad. He didn't make any mistakes. Obviously, he's now played his second season in the Premier League, so he's getting used to that quality that you have to produce every single week. So I think he's made the first massive step.
Well, the irony is, of course, and we've mentioned this on the show previously this season, that Lewis isn't at the level that he was at last year yet this season.
But he's certainly at the level that he needs to be, I think. I mean, yeah, I mean, I think what you've also got is that Shane Duffy, I think, has probably raised his game a little bit this season. He did have a little bit of a wobble last season. And
yeah, he's been the senior partner this year, which is good.
Yeah, and it was interesting because Balogun came in, only played one game, I believe.
Only one game.
He looked absolutely superb when he came in, and that must put pressure on the two that are in the team. I think they know they're the established duo to play at the centre-backs, but we know we have another international waiting to step in.
I did feel really sorry for Balogun because, I mean, he did nothing wrong in that game at all, and he looked so assured. Actually, it was one and a half games because he came on as a substitute, didn't he?
Oh, that's correct, yeah.
And he looked so assured, and he's a ball player as well, isn't he?
He's also fast as well. Yeah. I mean, it'd be interesting to see this afternoon whether we get to see, you know, if Lewis has picked up any new tricks from the England camp. He himself has said he wants to see
dirty ones.
Well, I think that's the point, isn't it? He's got one of the reasons that his game has been seen to improve so much is that one, he's cut out to a large extent his mistakes. I mean, he's a footballer, he's human, he'll make mistakes, of course he will. But when he makes a mistake, he won't go then flying in and try and take the opponent's legs out. He'll stand his ground because he realises that your team's going to function a lot better with 11 rather than 10. That aspect of his game, which we worried about 2 or 3 years ago, has now basically gone.
Yeah, his disciplinary record as well.
You know, he would go flying and he'd lose his rag quite easily. And now, one, he's a more mature player, where two, he's also been given the honour of being the captain in Bruno's absence, and that's has been quite a bit. You know, he's really. I'm likening sort of Peter Taylor giving David Beckham the captain's armband. You think, hang on, this bloke's a loose cannon. He's all pose and studs and what have you. And it actually was the making of him. And I think that actually Lewis Dunk getting the captain's armband at the Albion has actually elevated him even higher.
Mm. Well, the funniest thing about Dunk's call up was, it's an interview. Probably it's on the television right now if you're listening to this live, which is with Football Focus this week, where Lewis admitted that when he got the England call up, and it was actually a phone call, he missed it because he was asleep.
Well, that's what happens on Sunday mornings, isn't it? When people sleep. I mean.
Yeah, I think the great thing now is, you know, he's playing in a team where we haven't just got one player who's playing at the international level. You've got Dunk, Duffy playing together. You've got Matty Ryan behind them, who's a fantastic keeper. Bomb. You know, you've got the three of those, which I see as the core of our defence at the moment, all playing at this high standard and international football.
And for anyone who hasn't actually seen the save that Matty Ryan pulled off this midweek, oh my days.
He took off, didn't he? All this stuff about you saying he's a midget, sorry, all that argument's now out the window, mate, because he flew.
Yeah, if you think back to that, to our first couple of games in the Premier League, when we played away to Leicester, we got quite easily beaten. And that day, I think a lot of people questioned people like Matty Ryan. And I believe Dunk was playing that. I can't remember if Duffy played.
No, I'll hold my hands up. I did as well. I
mean, we didn't
it was
look
a friendly
good.
Against was it Atletico Madrid as well.
Well,
it?
There was and actually against Man City as well. Mm. He gifted them a goal.
Because I know there's been criticism of some of the signings we've made this year, but when you look at the players we have recruited over the past 4 or 5 seasons, we've recruited quality, and not every player is going to come off. And I know some haven't this season.
Hashtag LaCardia.
I think you have to give players time because if you'd followed the fans' view for Matty Ryan at the start of last season, he would have been out. We'd have replaced him. And he's proved himself. But I know LaCardia's has played here for a while now, but I think other players need to have that run into the team.
Mm. That's it. I mean, Chris has gone on record as saying that we see it ourselves every week when we're watching the team, that he's got his first 11. And, you know, if you're injured and you come back, you generally come back into the team, regardless of the form of anyone else behind them. We talked about this last week, but I do actually feel really quite sorry for Jurgen Lacadia, because, I mean, the form of Glenn Murray basically means he's not going to get that opportunity unless we play two up top, which I would like to see.
Well, the thing is also, look at this afternoon, there's a possibility of Proper and Gross being back, and that pushes Lacadia further back down the list again. If you're saying that is Houghton's chosen 11, Gross is probably it. Admittedly, Gross hadn't started the season that brilliantly, but if he's back up and firing again, then, you know, who knows what we can get back out of him. If we can see the Gross from last season, you know, we've gained a new player.
We've missed someone to hold the ball. This season we've suffered a little bit from giving the ball back to the opposition. I think Gross holds it up, and I think Proper does that role as well. We've missed them.
It's an interesting point when people say that, and I do fully agree with it. But I have to add to that, and I'm thinking it should be actually within the remit of any given professional footballer that they should be able to hold the ball. I mean, yeah, I understand the point you're making.
No, that's rugby.
I understand the point you're making, but and we've talked about this, you know, over the past four or five games. And Mark's absolutely right. The ease with which we're giving the ball away. Now, as it transpired, we won three of those games 1-0, but we suffered quite badly against Everton and against Cardiff. In neither game were we that particularly good. I mean, don't get me wrong, Cardiff were awful, but we could not retain the ball. And if you're saying that, okay, we're missing Proper and Gross, well, maybe we are. But, sorry, Knockhart knows how to keep the ball. Kyle knows how to keep the ball. They know how to pass it.
Is this just not the age-old thing of, when you're out of sight, your stock rises?
I think that these players who have been playing ought to be good enough. They know how to pass the ball. They could do it in the Championship. Mm. Yes, your opposition is better, and so you have to be that bit more precise, but they still have it within them to do it. And yet, time after time after time, we give the ball away cheaply. Yes, Gross and Proper do it less so, but I expect all of them to be able to keep the ball.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll say my final comment about Lacadia. When we signed Lacadia, which was for a lot of money, it turned Glenn Murray into an absolutely fantastic Premier League centre forward.
Yes. Yeah, I still believe. I mean,
But Glenn hasn't released a single yet, so, you know, we're working on that.
Well, we've all done it for him. But I'm still bucking the trend here. I still believe that somewhere down the line we're going to get something decent out of Lacadia. I don't know what it is, but somewhere, even if it's just a worldie and then that's it, but somewhere down the line, I think there is something about him.
It's Christmas number one?
Yeah, okay, all right, I'll buy that. I won't buy it,
No, Glenn, just remember, pretty girls are
nothing to be scared of.
Nothing to be scared of.
Yes.
Et cetera. Okay, Glenn, he could, you know, if he carries on this form, there's a possibility that he could be going to Portugal in the summer.
I still can't see it.
Mark, are you going to Portugal in the summer?
I will do. I was actually against the Nations Cup when it first came up, and I actually hold my hands up. I haven't been to any of the Nations Cup game. After Russia, I was against it. I thought it's another money-making exercise. I actually quite enjoy some of the friendlies we've had in far-flung places. But to be fair, it makes games interesting. And the Croatia game was right down to the last minute. And even the Scotland-Israel game, which would have been a meaningless game before, it became so important because a goal for Israel would have put them through to the knockouts.
Have you changed your opinion of the whole concept of it now then?
I still think it needs tweaks, because having three teams in the group is too small, in my opinion, and it makes it a bit of a mockery. And for, you know, teams to get relegated, the relegation and promotion and teams going into automatic knockouts, I think, for the Euros, it's so complicated, it needs tweaking.
My personal view of it would be, I actually really like it. I take your point that three teams is, and maybe move it to four, that's right. But I think I should just do it as a standalone competition. Do away with a chance to qualify for the Euros. Just do it as a standalone competition, and do it every 2 years in between the tournaments. Because I really like the fact that at the top level you're gonna get competitive games like the England Spain game, the Croatia game, and you know those games were really exciting. But then when you look further down and you're seeing teams like Moldova playing against Gibraltar or Georgia or something like that, basically these teams, if they go into the normal qualifiers, it's damage limitation in every single game they play. So it's nice for those teams to actually go into a game and actually have a chance of actually winning a game, and they're not going to get better by getting their bums handed to them every
week.
And
it's been interesting. If you look at some of England's last qualifiers, like when we played teams like Lithuania, it started off, the crowds used to be sellouts because it was England were playing them. That hasn't happened over the last few years. But I think I noticed in, I think it was Kosovo, Malta, played Malta, and it was a complete sellout in their new stadium because it was an important game. Because, it, as you say, it meant something. They had an opportunity to win something.
I think what you've got with the format is that England really lucked out by having two big power, European powerhouses in their group with Spain and Croatia, and the fact that England are in the ascendancy at the moment made it a kind of a, effectively a group of death. And well, because
you mean the France, Germany, and Holland game, the group was they're all also rounds, aren't they?
No. The point
Germany are today.
Well, yeah, there you go. But the point I was going to make about it was, we lucked out with it, and as Mark said, it went to the last minute. But there's other groups also of three. Like, I think it might have been Ireland's group or something like that. Those games were done after sort of three rounds, kind of thing. And if we'd have had that, or if we, you know, if we'd have been in a group where we'd have actually destroyed it, people have said, "Well, that's a bit pointless." You know, here we are, we've just destroyed everyone. For the last two games, we're twiddling our thumbs, and you know, we can even pick. You know, there's a centre, you know, a reserve centre half to play for England. So it made it a little bit that we lucked out. What I'm saying is, we lucked out with how exciting that thing was. But when you've got groups like the Ireland one, where it was done far too quickly, I think that the criticism would have been levelled. This is a rubbish tournament.
So I mean, so basically, as Mark was saying, you would say add another team into the group and make it.
I think it needs to be a four, because, like I say, having it as a three. Yeah. I mean, Spain are sort of probably they're sitting there not being. I mean, England and Croatia knew what they needed to do, and they all right. As it transpired, they both needed to win. But supposing only one needed a draw and one needed a win, then you've got that ridiculous farcical situation.
Yeah, they've normally done it now, so you always have even numbers, so you don't get that. They always play at the same time on the last group, which happens in all World Cups. But now, as you say, England play Croatia. Both teams knew what they needed to get through.
But that was just a kind of a sort of fortunate happenstance for the tournament itself. But if there was, you know, one needed a win and one needed a draw, then you knew full well that one of them was going to park the bus. And it made it exciting that both teams needed to win. Don't get me wrong.
Okay. Well, you mentioned Republic of Ireland there. And there was a landmark moment for in Albion history this week. Well, it was actually lost. We missed it.
We missed one. But, yeah.
But it was with Shane Duffy. And he overtook Steve Penny's long-held record.
He only seems to have been with us for 5 minutes as well, doesn't he, Shane Duffy?
Well, no, it's been a bit longer than that.
Well, it's just over 2 years, but it seems to be very, very quick time that he's actually turned around and done this.
But I mean, that record's been stood since 1986, pretty much. And
'86, '87.
Oh, yeah, but Steve Penny. It's Steve Penny.
All right, okay. But no, it's a brilliant achievement. And you know full that, well, with Shane Duffy, there's more to come. I mean, he's one of the first choices of the Ireland team. Yeah. It's interesting that that O'Neill and Keane have left their role. It'll be interesting to see who they get in. I can't believe that Duffy wouldn't carry on
being
centre.
It's going to be Mick McCarthy.
You reckon?
Yes.
Yeah, it's an obvious choice, obviously. I think he's showing what a good job he did at Ipswich now that I believe they're bottom of the league, one win in 19.
Yeah.
And the FII don't have any money, which is why they didn't sack O'Neill and King and before because they couldn't afford to do it. Right, so basically, they were hoping they were going to do a Sammy Hoopier and walk. But I mean, the greatest player ever to wear a Brighton shirt, also known as Steve Penny.
Do you like Steve Penny by any chance? I really wish you'd say.
Have you got a picture of him in your wallet by any chance?
I've got a picture of him on my phone. Hang on, didn't you go to, because when you were a little and you went to one of these pre-season photo op things, didn't you?
Yeah.
And you did the classic footballer's pose of sitting down on one knee with your arm draped across your upright knee.
The old Spall Nobo shirt.
That's it. And you and who was it in that picture?
Me and Steve Penny. And to be fair, I did have Doug Rugby, Gary Lloyd, Kevin Bremner, Steve Gatting.
Let's face
well,
it, but it's Steve Penny is the one you only give a monkey's about.
But anyway, as I was saying, the greatest player ever to wear a Brighton shirt. I spoke to Steve this week, and he's actually away this week because he was going to come on the show this week and have a chat with us about this. He's going to come on in the next week or so, I believe, in the next couple of weeks and have a chat with us.
You would want to get Steve Penny on the show without Karen Hasted. Karen would never forgive you.
Yeah. But I spoke to him, and Steve said on Shane Duffy, he said, "He's doing very well. I would say that now that the Albion are established in the Premier League, there'll be many more players to overtake me, but it's still nice to have a little bit of history with the club."
Absolutely. I mean, like I say, he had that record for 32 years. It says more about the club's sort of
decline,
yeah, crash and burn, than it does about Steve Penny. But having said that, I think that Steve Penny, as a certain manager who we'll talk about in a minute would say, is that he felt that he could have got even more out of him. So, so as much as he's your favourite player, the best player, you probably Brighton fans probably never. Actually, let's ask you, as soon as we're on this love fest, Mark, what do you remember about Steve Penny?
I do remember coming in, obviously he was a quality winger. At the time, I remember we used to have a really frustrating team, so we had a good squad then, but we had nobody who could really turn it on every week. Steve Penny, like every winger, used to have good games and bad games, but he could turn a game. He could turn a game by himself, and he was quality.
Adi's going to start crying in a minute.
But I mean, that team that that manager put together, it was just phenomenal. I mean, there was so much talent in that team.
Yeah. We underperformed. If you look at it in many ways.
But. So remind me, who signed Steve Penny?
Well, I think you'd have to look towards this chap, Christopher Catlin, who, funnily enough, we've got at the Rialto Theatre in Dyke Road on Wednesday the 12th of December. Him and his old mucker, Andy Rollings. I mean, between them, they could rot the town's teeth, because one sells sugary tea and the other one used to sell rock candy. But they were also excellent defenders, good mates together. So we've got Andy Rollings and Chris Catlin.
Stalwarts of the 79 promotion team, of course.
Absolutely. At the Rialto Theatre, Wednesday the 12th of December.
Where can you get tickets, Al?
Tickets are available at rialtotheatre.co.uk or on 01273 725 230.
How much are they, Al?
They're £8... Stop giggling, Mark. It's making me giggle. £8 and £6. And come along and drink beer. And if you're really good, you can heckle.
No, you can't.
Oh, well, you can in the second half. We'll do a Q&A session towards the end of the second show.
You can heckle Phil Collins.
Phil Collins? Yes, you can always heckle Phil Collins.
Also, you can also heckle Phil Shelley. He's also going to be there wearing one of his beautiful shirts of the week.
He claims otherwise. He's in the car at the moment on the way to Wiltshire. He claims otherwise. So
I have to say, the Phoenix sponsored top was one of my favourite Albion tops, especially the red away kit. I actually love that.
Are you talking about the one with the white bands across the shoulder, or just the plain one?
I actually like the one with the white bands.
Okay.
Which leads us on to something else, which is, we might as well do noticeable while we're here. We've been in contact with our friends I can't remember who our friends are.
Oldfootballshirts.com.
Oldfootballshirts.com. No.
Art of Football, sorry.
Oh, the Art of Football, of course, yes. And
showing me the running order, mate.
Yeah. We've been in contact with our friends at Art of Football, and they've designed a new Albion-themed shirt.
It's lovely.
And they wanted, we've got our feedback, and they wanted to know what shirt to use. And funnily enough, the two that came up were the 79 Buckter shirt.
Yeah.
And the 86-87 Phoenix Brewery Adidas shirt.
With the one with the white stripes across the chest.
One.
Okay.
Yeah. And they said that the Adidas one's lovely, which it was. Which is controversial because it wasn't
stripes.
It's not stripes, no. That's still my favourite album shirt of all time.
I don't remember Phoenix Brewery, but I was too young. I didn't drink that in those days, but I don't recall Phoenix Brewery at all.
It says over there. He says pointing on the radio show. That works, doesn't it?
Well, you don't remember the company, or don't remember the sponsor being on there?
I remember the sponsor being on there, but I don't remember the beer.
Oh, I see, yeah. No, it was a brewery of questionable taste at just behind, literally about a 5-minute walk from here at the bottom end of the level. We've seen a prototype of it. They've got this kind of teddy bear motif, and he's wearing a 79 Buckter shirt holding a pint of Harvey's. Hopefully that'll be winging its way somewhere into our online shops just before Christmas.
And there will be a competition to give one of those
away.
And
we'll ask them nicely if we can model them.
We'll see if we can get that and announce the winner at the Rialto on the 12th of December. That
absolutely,
be good,
yeah.
Okay, but we are, of course, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm Eddie Hacker. I'm here with Mark Raven and Alan Wares. We are delighted as ever to be brought to you in association with the fantastic oldfootballshirts.com. And Phil has given me a shirt of the week, which I'm just handing over to Mr. Raven here. If you could just describe that for me.
Goodness me.
Well, that is quite hideous, I have to say, actually. It's got red and yellow stripes down the far side of the kit. It's blue. It's made by Araya.
If it's Araya, then that's football shirt porn for Phil.
And the badge appears to have a tree with two poodles.
Poodles, or is it Red and Yellow Lions? Or
I actually have to confess.
I think it's Upstanding Lions.
They are lions. Yeah. So it's
and the sponsor is Valverde, which I think means Green Valley. But that. I don't know if it's your print, Radio, but that blue seems to be a kind of a slightly purpley blue.
No, that is actually a purpley blue.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. Now that's a. I'd say that's a 1970s kit in my guess, because I think it's quite hideous, personally.
It's pretty noisy. I'm going to guess. The fact is, Valverde, I would say it's Spanish or Hispanic, which actually then narrows it down to the rest of South America. If it was a bear leaning against a tree, I'd say it's a Madrid club, but it's not. It's two lions. Above and beyond that, not a clue. Mark, okay. Any guesses?
No clue. The badge doesn't give anything away.
Well, no. You will remember this shirt, Mark. You will remember this one. But for the very reason, here is your shirt of the week, says Phil. This is the 1998 to 99 away shirt of Italian Serie A side Ravenna.
Ravenna. My kid.
Ravenna Calcio. Do you see what I did there?
By the way, it's Serie C.
Yeah.
Carry on.
It's more modern than I thought.
Yeah, known as the Giello Rossi, the yellow and reds, they play at the 12,020 capacity Stadio Bruno Benelli in Ravenna, which is the capital city of Emilia Romagna region in northern Italy. They were originally formed in 1913, but they were also reformed twice after bankruptcies in 2001 and 2012. They're currently playing in Group B of Serie C, which is the third level of football in Italy. Serie C is split into three regions: northeast, northwest, and south, with a total of 60 teams competing. Christian Vieri is probably the most well-known past player of the Giello Rossi, making 32 appearances and scoring 12 times in the 92-93 season. The only UK link that I can find is former Ravenna goalkeeper Marco Ambrosio, who played for Chelsea after signing for Claudio Ranieri in 2003, made league appearances before moving back to Europe. I can't find any links to the Albion, but I can give you a link to Sussex, because the city of Ravenna is twinned with Chichester.
There you go. Thanks for that, Phil. And if you want to catch up with that and 95,000 other shirts, really, 95,000, go to oldfootballshirts.com and have a good browse at your heart's content, and you'll find that in the middle of somewhere.
And if you want to
catch... Serie C side, Ravenna.
And if you want to catch up with two of Phil's very special shirts, you'll be able to see that at the Rialto Theatre on the 12th of December, where Phil will be modelling.
We'd like to invite people along, not bludgeon them.
This is true. Yeah. I'm all for bludgeoning. But, you know, it's a beautiful thing.
Yes, I've heard your music.
Unfortunately, I happen to know that Phil is normally incredibly cruel to me when he does his
Italian
lines.
Is bad. Actually, English is bad enough for you.
Italian,
mate.
I can do. But
strokes chin thoughtfully.
Okay, moving swiftly on. Okay, Al.
In past programs we've worked out and realised that now we're a Premier League club, we've got fans across the world, and some are expats and some of them gone travelling. In this instance, we have a Brighton fan who's he left us the moment we got to the Premier League and headed to Southeast Asia.
Okay, I'm delighted to say that we are joined by long-time Albion fan, I suppose you say Worthing, Southwick, Brighton's very own Chris Popjoy, who is halfway across the world. Chris, how are you?
I'm fine, Alan. Thank you. How are you?
I'm fine. It's cold here, but I understand you're halfway up a mountain in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. I'm in the very remote mountain region, northern Vietnam, a place called Hajiang.
Right. You put that intonation in as if, you know, I know what you're on about. For those in that case that know Vietnam, tell us about it, because the rest of us, it's just going to be a complete and utter mystery.
Well, funny enough, actually, it's probably the coldest region in Vietnam. Because it literally is, it's right in the north and it's up in the mountainous area. It's still probably a good 10 degrees warmer than back home, probably 15 degrees actually.
So I hope you're not moaning about the weather then.
I'm not moaning. They think it's really funny. I'm going around in an Albion shirt and they're all in puffer jackets.
So what on earth possessed you, a man of your years, let's face it, you're not 18 anymore, what on earth possessed you to actually just pack up, the moment we get to the Premier League, to pack up and then disappear halfway around the world? What's going on?
Okay, well, my daughter would say that, you know, when most fathers get a midlife crisis, they go out and get a Harley Davidson.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I, I decided to take an opportunity that was afforded me to go and volunteer for a orangutan rehabilitation centre in northern Borneo, and that was in the at the beginning of May.
Mm-hmm. Now, orangutans, obviously, they're sort of like, I suppose, the animal du jour at the moment, aren't they?
They are. It's a very hot topic at the moment, and I was very privileged to manage the resources for a charity in northern Borneo.
Yeah.
And got very, very close, obviously, to the project. I was there for 3 months.
Yeah.
You know, living in the ranger's village, going trekking, gathering data, videos, all that sort of thing. And I really, really got a good insight into the whole sort of backstory, really.
Sure. So, I mean, I assume that you've seen the, I mean, let's not get too political on this, but I assume that you've seen the furore that's kicked in back home about, you know, a banned supermarket advertisement and things like that.
Yeah. But even here, you know, we see it obviously via Twitter and things like that. I mean, what I will say, just, you know, without getting too long-winded and political, I mean, it's all about sustainability. It's not about banning palm oil. Mm. It's about sustainability. That's the way forward, really.
All right. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's probably a subject for another radio show. But, I mean, what did you personally get out of it?
Well, I mean, to be honest, I mean, I obviously did my research before I went out to Borneo. but, you know, I had absolutely no idea about the numbers and the deforestation. And, I mean, obviously, I travelled after leaving Borneo. I travelled all the way through, down through Borneo, into Sumatra, and which is the Indonesian rather than the Malaysian part. And mm-hmm. You drive for hours and hours and hours, and all you see is palm oil plantations. That's all you see. Mm. And when you fly across the countries like Java and Sumatra, it just you're flying for hours, and all you see is palm oil. That's all you see. So it is, yeah, it's quite distressing, that side of it, to be honest.
Sure. Let's get back to the footy and sports stuff. I mean, you know, as part of your travels, I mean, actually, just let us know where you've been and sort of any stories on the way. So you started off in Borneo. Where else have you been?
Yep. Well, I started off in Borneo, and that's where I started the, just for a bit of fun, really, Seagulls Over Asia.
Right.
Because while I was out in Borneo, it was the World Cup was on.
Right.
And, I mean, the Asians are absolutely mental about anything football. So the World Cup, the Premier League, that sort of thing, they're absolutely crazy about it.
Mm.
It's far more so than their own domestic sort of leagues. And so what happened was there was an intern working for the orangutan centre, and his father was involved in an orphanage. Now, as it happened, I had a suitcase half full of Albion's branded T-shirts, which a friend of mine gave me to bring out, because I knew I'd come across youngsters and that, and, you know, in villages and things like that because of the volunteering. So I had these T-shirts, and so what happened was he invited me to this orphanage, and they had a little Sunday league. So what we did was we ran this competition on Facebook to try and find a team change name. We settled on the Zandakan, which was the town, Junior Seagulls. So we changed the name to Zandakan Junior Seagulls. We gave them the kit, and I did a fundraiser for them as well. So we raised enough money for them to all have the shirts, the football boots, the equipment and all that to last them for at least a couple of years. Mm. So I've got great photos of these youngsters all running around, you know, in Brighton tops.
So you are Popjoy the missionary over in Java.
Very, very much so, all the way through Java, Sumatra, down through Bali, Timor-Leste,
yeah,
and then back to Vietnam, which is where I ended up. And you do very much, as a Caucasian, you know, especially in remote regions like where I am now, you are pretty much the only Caucasian that they see, and like they're not used to hairy arms and things like that, you know. It's crazy.
Or people hairy palms.
The people will come up to you and start stroking your arm, you know. And you know, if that was in the high street in Brighton, you'd get a bit worried, wouldn't you?
You would. Well, not in Kemp Town, no. But yeah, I get your point. But you know, yeah. So you're doing the missionary work. I mean, you know, I mean, have you taught them to the words to Sussex by the Sea yet? I mean, have you taught them to We Hate Palace and?
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is, when I ended up in so there I am in Borneo. Went over to Sumatra, did a bit more work with orangutans there, and then basically did a backpacking thing all the way through Sumatra, through Java, into a independent island called Timor-Leste. Now, when I left England, I had 6 Brighton tops and football shirts with me. Mm-hmm. I've only got one left, and they are the ones that I gave away are adorning the backs of rangers in the Borneo rainforest.
Right.
A bar owner in Kota Kinabalu who was an absolutely crazy mental Chelsea fan.
Right.
But he, every time Brighton plays, he wears the Brighton shirt. A volunteer at the Palembang Games, who again was really knowledgeable about Brighton, only a young 23-year-old university graduate. So he's got one as well. So yeah, so I'm down to just one shirt now, and I've only got 5-6 weeks before I head back home, so hopefully I can keep that one on my back.
Well, maybe you should have actually asked the club, actually, and if you've got a sort of an address there for the time being, you know, sort of any sort of shirts you've got for us here, mate, because, you know, Southeast Asia is screaming out from us, especially the remote parts, not the cities, it seems, but, you know, the remote parts seem to want your shirts.
Yeah, they do, and the thing is, you know, it's like the orphanage, you know, when I come back to the UK through Albion in the community, I might well contact the club and try and see if there's something we can do.
Absolutely. Now, you've been, like I say, dotted around sort of an area probably about the at least the size of Europe, because I mean we're talking about a vast expanse of travel you've been on, but also you've become a bit of a transport expert as well.
yeah. Basically what happened was I got down to the southern part of Sumatra. And I realised that I didn't realise at the time, but the Asian Games were on. So that's the sort of Asian equivalent of the sort of Commonwealth Games.
Okay.
And I thought, right, well, while I'm there, I'll see if I can take some of the events on. And so I headed towards the stadium. The official opening was the day before. So I head towards the stadium, and that particular Asian Games was in 2 locations, Palembang, which is southern Sumatra, and then the capital of Indonesia, Jakarta, which is about an hour's flight from there. Yep. So they're the sort of 2 city hosting, if you like. And anyway, so I head towards the stadium, and I see this light railway system. So I walked up the stairs, and it was sort of quite weird, really, because it was all very new and nobody about, really. I walked towards the sort of main concourse. Everything was new, nobody about apart from this film crew and what looked like a few dignitaries. So anyway, I walked towards them, and they sort of bowed and greeted me, and ushered everybody onto this light railway system. And I'm sitting there and looking around, and it clearly wasn't being used by commuters. And this lady came up to me and said, hello there, you know, where are you from? Are you reporting this from like Europe or whatever? I said, no, I'm just a tourist. Oh, she said, okay. She said, would you mind doing a bit to camera? Because we're sort of interested in people's ideas.
Right.
So, spookily, I just sort of said, well, obviously, you know, back in 2012, London Olympics, you know, we've got our own light railway system, and this is just so much better.
You creep.
Their eyes lit up. I know. Well, that creeping paid off, because I got an email from her that night saying that her boss, the head of the head of the transport department,
was
so impressed and delighted with my bit to camera, which was being shown on TV, that they offered me an invitation to go to the one of the events the following day, which was China playing Hong Kong China.
Right.
In football.
Right.
So, and again, that was another story, because following day, a car turns up. This lady got out and she said, here's your VIP area, access all areas pass. Took me to the stadium. I get out. I get ushered through the turnstiles. I go up. The doors are being opened. Gates are being opened. The next thing I know, I'm sat in the Olympic sort of gallery area next to all these delegates from China and Singapore. And they're all looking at me, the only Caucasian in the stadium. I mean, there's like 30,000 people. I didn't see one other Caucasian there. And
they just assume, Chris, I think they just assume that you are there for, you know, corrupt Western capitalists there to, you know, look over the games for them.
Well, they looked at me and, like, the guys from Singapore, they were like proper official, people from Singapore and China. And they said, who was I representing? Was I there on behalf of the British?
Well, Brighton and Hove Albion, of course.
I'm just a tourist, you know. So, yeah, so that was quite funny.
But you said they didn't have food or drink or anything there. I mean, you know, for the fact you got treated as a VIP, you know, you got there and left there hungry.
Well, funny enough, out of the 30,000 people in the stadium, the area that I was sitting, the VIP area, was the only area where they brought bottled water and some fruit and some sort of cake, whatever. But literally, it opened the day before.
Yeah.
And I had a little walk around the stadium, outside and inside. There was not one single outlet selling any food, drink of any description whatsoever. And there were 30,000 people there.
Joe from Piglet's Pantry, are you listening? There is another outlet for you.
There's a definite market there, definitely.
So, yeah, it sounds like you had a fabulous time just because you said that the trains were nice. I suppose it's not an opportunity you get in this country to say that the trains are nice, and if you do, then people think you're a bit weird.
Yeah, exactly. But they're very proud of anything new.
So they're very proud of anything new?
Yeah, yeah. You know, they take great delight on showing you the latest new bus in the city, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah, great stuff. But Nate, when you eventually moved up to Vietnam, you kind of had a similar experience the only Caucasian when you went to footy in Hanoi as well, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I arrived in Hanoi and... bearing in mind, Hanoi is a city of 8+ million people.
Yeah.
They've only really got one football team, you know, and that's just playing in their one football team.
Right.
They've got some little minor teams, but there's one major team, and they play in their sort of Premier League, and that's Hanoi FC.
Yeah.
And they don't play in a very big stadium. The stadium only holds about 20,000 people, which surprised me.
Mm-hmm.
Although the national team play in a big, like, but even that's only like 60,000 capacity. Anyway, so I heard that Hanoi were playing their last game of penultimate game of the season, but their last game at home.
Yeah.
Now, bearing in mind, Hanoi were 20 points clear top of the league. They were being awarded the trophy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was told it was going to be a big celebration and fireworks, all that sort of thing. So I thought, great. So anyway, I made my way to the stadium, got there and went to pay. And they said, oh, no, you know, it's there's no charge. It's free entry.
What?
Just to thank the supporters. So there's going to be a big celebration.
Paul Barber, take note.
Yeah. And part of the reason was to try and get as big a crowd as possible. So I thought, why would you need to give away free tickets for that game? You know, can you imagine that at the Amex? You know, it'd be lucky if Mr. Barber doesn't decide to double the price, you know. anyway, so I get inside the stadium, and bearing in mind, it's about, I think it's 22,000 it holds.
Right.
It was less, and it's free, right?
Mm-hmm.
In a city of 8 million people, it had to be at the very least, it was half full. There couldn't have been more than about 9,000 people in there.
Is football in Vietnam that bad?
Yeah. They've completely... Well, what happened was, at half-time, I got talking to these young lads sitting behind me who were all in the tracksuit, Hanoi tracksuits, and they turned out to be like our under-18s. You know,
right.
They were like Hanoi youth. And I said to them, I said, you know, do you speak English? Yeah. And people kept coming up to me with selfies. Again, I'm the only Caucasian in the stadium. You know, the selfies, going mad. And they said that...
they think you were.
Well, the thing is, if in Asia, if you're white and you're in a fairly sort of unusual environment, i.e. you're the only Caucasian there, people just keep randomly coming up, and if they're not stroking your arm, they want a photo taken with you. You know,
weird.
It's quite crazy.
Yeah,
I don't know what's going to happen when I get back home.
But you're loving it. You tell me you're not loving it.
I tell you, I'm going to be walking along Western Road in Brighton and I'm going to be so disappointed that people are just ignoring me, you know? It's going to be quite surreal.
All right.
I know.
Anyway, so you're talking to these lads at halftime.
Yeah, and I said, I don't understand why there's so few people here. And they said, well, basically, he said, Vietnamese people have fallen out of love with Vietnamese local football because of corruption. Most teams, including Hanoi was disbanded in 2008 and reformed again through corruption. And I think in the last 40 years, Hanoi FC have been sort of shut down and reformed about five or six times in that period of time.
Right.
Can you imagine that back home? It's crazy. We have a lot of pride, don't we? If your team was sort of formed in 1901, that's great pride in that. But,
Absolutely.
But anyway, they've fallen out of love with it, and it's the corruption, it's the match rigging. So what they do is they all support Premier League, all of them. I mean, they're just absolutely crazy. Everywhere you go, Man United shirts, Chelsea, Arsenal, and obviously now Brighton.
I was about to say, now Missionary Popjoy takes over.
Exactly that.
So have you actually sold them their souls on the Albion then?
Well, it's quite interesting because I went to, in Palembang, we were playing Man United. So it was our game against Man United, and I spoke to a taxi driver, and I said, you know, can you tell me where I can see the game? I don't want to watch it in the hotel.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, there's a sports bar around the corner. Well, what he forgot to tell me was it was Palembang's Manchester United Supporters Club home.
Ouch.
I walked in, there were 300 Asian Man United fans, all in their shirts, all singing in Asian accents, glory, glory, Man United, all this sort of thing, which is hilarious.
To be fair, they're not that far away from people who turn up to the game there regularly anyway. So, you know, it's...
How did I know you were going to say that? Yeah. So, of course, I walk in my Brighton shirt, and the gasp, like the intake of air, was audible. It was like, WTF, what is going on? What is this lunatic, this hairy, white, 6-foot spectacle doing here? And I'll tell you what, they couldn't have been more gracious. They couldn't have been more hospitable. I didn't put my hand in my pocket once, and free drinks. It was just, it was incredible.
And we won,
which was even funnier. And just before I forget, you know, you're talking about spreading the love.
Yeah.
What happened? I ended up from Hanoi. Ended up meeting somebody and said, I'm going to this northern remote mountain region in Hajiang.
Mm-hmm.
I'm volunteering. Do you fancy it? So I thought, no, it's not really my cup of tea. I mean, I can barely speak English myself, you know.
True.
And so anyway, I did. I got on the bus. It was a 10-hour bus journey high up into the northern region. And so I started teaching primary and kindergarten. And got involved in other projects as well, community business development, helping and bits and pieces. Anyway, but one of the things that you do, especially with kindergarten, is you have to do a bit of, songs, you know. So I was getting fed up with Baby Shark. So there's one class, so it's Hung Tung School, class 4B, and I kid you not, one of the songs that they now sing is Good Old Sussex by the Sea. You can't make it up. It's hilarious.
Cap suitably doffed, Chris. Well played, sir.
Brilliant, yeah.
Well done. So in some remote jungle in the north of Vietnam, there is a little corner of Sussex.
There is. And you know what? They're proper little gangsters and they won't be druv.
Fantastic. Listen, Chris, when are you back? I mean, you've been away for a while. Are you coming back soon?
I'm coming back on the 9th of January, mm-hmm. And that in itself is a bit of a story, because when I got to Asia, Borneo, 7th of May, I was only really supposed to be in the area for 3 months, and I decided after a couple of months that I wanted to stay longer, do a bit of travelling, a bit of volunteering, that type of thing, but I had to decide, when am I going back to the UK, you know, got to pick a date, you know. I had to make a decision. So the decision I made, I looked at the football fixture list, And on the ninth of January, we play Liverpool at home, and that pretty much is exactly the halfway point of the season. Almost, right. It's like I've sort of missed the first lot of home and away games of most of those teams. Then, so I thought, right, I can't be doing with missing the whole season. So I thought, right, okay, I'll come home then. So that's what I'm doing.
Brilliant. Well, listen, mate, I'm glad you're enjoying yourself out there. Have yourself a good Christmas over there. And when you get back, do look us up, won't you?
Yeah, Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to everybody.
Chris Popjoy, thanks very much indeed for being on The Raw.
Yeah, that was Alan talking to Chris Popjoy, who over in Vietnam with the orangutans and having a wild time.
He's the missionary. He is our man in Southeast Asia, trying to spread the love of the seagulls.
Is he the wild man of Borneo? This is the question.
No, yeah. He's relatively tame. He's well house-trained.
It'll be a good new guest for you dealing with orangutans.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, I have to do that on a regular basis.
Very true.
Yes. But, you are listening to The Albion Raw here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM online. At RadioReverb.com on DAB and, of course, on our podcast. I'm Eddie Packham. I'm here with Alan Weirs and Mark Raven. And, guys, VAR is going to be...
Deep joy.
...is going to be employed in the Premier League next season. Mark, thoughts?
Yeah, it'll be interesting because, obviously, we were one of the very first teams, or were the first team, to have a game under VAR, where I don't believe, even though they refer the decisions, there was no call to go to the third official. Mm-hmm. It was used in Russia when I was out there for the World Cup, and we were discussing it earlier, and I can't actually recall a critical decision being made in any of the England matches.
But did you only go to England games?
I did.
Oh, right, okay.
So, technology, I support it in some ways. It works in cricket. To me, it's still that delay of a game I find difficult to cope with, because sometimes a bad refereeing decision is part of football. Well, that's what I grew up with. Mm-hmm. They say it levels out during the season, whether it does or not. So it'll be interesting, but I'm really torn about whether it's good or not.
I mean, Al, I'm with Mark on this one.
In order to make our minds up, and you have to see it in action. I mean, it is a case of sort of let the dog see the rabbit. And the fact it was a very surprising decision to have it for the World Cup when it was still largely untested. I thought that was one tournament too soon. Having said that, I don't think it particularly made a mockery of the tournament per se. I think that the ideas behind it and the consideration and the thoughts behind it are very well meaning. I do agree that football is a human game and therefore shouldn't be beholden to technology. I think that if there is a way of actually having a decision that is immediate, like, for instance, goal line technology, I don't think anyone really argues with that, because it's within a second. Nothing else is going to happen with goal line technology that's going to affect the game. So, but with VAR, where you have to stop, you know, get out a packed lunch, look at the telly, decide what's going to happen. Yes, it's not great, especially when... And I think that with cricket, and this is what Mark mentioned with cricket, you can see how the decisions are arrived at. Now, I'm not also totally in favour of these decisions being played out on the big screen, where you've effectively got, therefore, trial by stadium. And I don't think that's the right way of doing it. Plus the additional...
We could all do a thumbs up or thumbs down, couldn't we? It'd be brilliant.
But you've also got the
gladiator.
You could have a foam hand.
Yeah.
Yes!
We've also got the consideration, believe it or not every Premier League club has a giant screen. It doesn't have a giant screen. Old Trafford doesn't have a big screen. So that's another thing that's to be considered. And although I think that's the kind of, you know, the fourth or fifth sort of thing down the line. My attitude to it has softened a little bit, but not to the point that I think it's going to be the be all and end all. It still has to be used properly and appropriately. I mean, we had that sort of absolute farcical situation of that game in Germany last season. I don't know if you remember that, guys, when a penalty VAR decision was overturned when the players were already back in the tunnel. Yeah. And that is just not proper use of VAR.
Well, I mean, can't the referees be mic'd up like they are in American football, so they can explain the decision?
No, because that means that every decision would be explained then, and I don't think that's necessary. I think that the hand signals
are
enough.
Only the VAR ones, but I mean, I'm just thinking out loud here, basically.
Yeah, one of my problems now is, even when a team scores, what do you wait for a decision? Do you know it's going to be a goal, or are they going to review everything? And to me, as you know, as we said, human error is part of football, in my opinion.
And takes away the joy of scoring a goal.
And I want the free flow of football. You don't want to be stopping for decisions. But I can see if you get a horrendous decision, a bit like when Germany scored against England when it hit the crossbar.
No, England scored.
Scored. It was so far over the line. We knew it was over the line. Obviously, that would have been given. Decisions like that turn the game, whether we'd have come back, I don't know.
Look at last week. You know, what would we have felt about it? Here we are, sort of like moan, criticise, and yet it would have actually overturned our, you know, Cardiff's winning goal.
Yeah, I say when it's once again, it needs to be clear cut and it needs to be fast, and there's too many farcical situations. I believe it's used in Italy and Germany regularly. One of my mates watches Italian football, and he said some of the VAR decisions are as bad as the calls that seem to be made by the first referee.
Italian football being corrupt, who knew?
It's about the implementation of it. That's the issue.
I mean, it's, you know, like I said, it takes the joy out of scoring a goal. I mean, can you imagine that that Scandinavian team? I can't remember which kind of, I think it was Finnish, who did that famous salmon goal scoring celebration where they rocked up and they pretended to take the photo. Can you imagine doing that after VAR?
Well, I think that those sorts of goal celebrations are absolutely stupid anyway. I mean, they're driving around the twist. The pre-choreographed ones, you mean?
But that was genius. Come on.
We haven't had too many at the Albion, luckily.
No, I mean, the worst one was probably the ring of roses, but...
Glenn's first goal?
It was. Okay, where are we at with it? At the moment, I think that because we've got another half a season, or two-thirds of a season, for it to be ironed out, then I think the important point is to consider where VAR is at nationally and internationally by the time it's implemented. At the moment, I'm still not in favour of it, irrespective of the fact that, yes, it would have overturned Cardiff's winning goal. But let's see where we're at. I mean, you've got to keep an open mind on it, but by the same token, at the moment, I don't think we're there yet.
So you just want to keep... We just need to keep it real.
I want to ruin everyone else's football before it ruins ours.
Football's a real sport. It's a real game. It's live. It's the ebb and flow. And speaking of Rialto...
Is there something going on there?
Tell us what's happening on the 12th of December, Mark?
12th of December, I do believe there's someone called Chris Catlin and Andy Rollings doing a little soiree with two radio presenters, I believe.
Yeah, it's a couple of tacky Herberts that won't disappear off your airwaves. Feed them red wine
£8 a ticket?
£8, a bargain. That's not even two rounds, is it? Two pints, is it?
I can't recall the telephone number, though.
01273
0181 811 8055.
The Seagull Home.
Swap shop.
So no, of course, obviously we'd absolutely love to see you there, and it's going to be a fabulous.
Maybe
a fabulous. Absolutely. Well, Mark, you've been to these, but both of us.
Yep, they're really good events, and I say the two players you've got, you know, they are from the previous, obviously our old roles in the First Division and 79-80. Yep. Andy Rollings was the core of the team when I was growing up, and then Chris Catlin came along, First Division days. Legendary player for us. They'll be fantastic to hear speaking.
Absolutely. No, looking forward to that.
Yeah, and of course we'll be back next week. So thank you to Mark Raven. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been AD Packham, and I mean, we're on a run of two defeats, and you know, hopefully we can turn that around today. But you know, it's the hope that kills you.
You're an old man's going through the bins, so it goes on Hope Street. There's a fight right down the street. The betting shop has got him beat. Blew his money